February 26th, 2024, and ask staff to please call the roll.
Council President Curry.
Here.
Oliver Veer. Oliver Veer.
Here.
Alder Vitiver.
Here.
Alder Madison.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Alder Rummel.
Present.
Mayor, you have quorum.
Thank you. All right. Our first item is general public comment. We have no registrants. So we'll move on to disclosures and recusals. Are there any disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? Seeing none, then we'll move on to the consent agenda. We have one registrant wishing to speak on item 12. So we'll separate that item. Are there other items that alders would like to have separated from the consent agenda? Alder Rummel.
Number 9, Mayor, thank you.
Number 9. President Curry.
Number 3, please.
Number 3. Alder Revere.
Thank you, Mayor. Please add agenda item number 4 as it's a companion to agenda item number 3.
Number 4.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any additional items that alders would like to have separated? Dave?
Mayor, I don't know if you got my email, but we would like to refer the discussion item on the internal audit presentation to a future meeting.
Alder Evers, thank you. as much as I would like to hear that sound check. So the note then that the motion on item 22 will be to refer to a future finance committee meeting. Are there any other items alders would like to have separated from the consent agenda? Seeing none, then President Curry, a motion on the consent agenda?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda. Items to be excluded are 3, 4, 9, and 12. With a note that the recommendation on 22 is to refer to a future finance committee meeting. Questions, discussion? Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of the consent agenda? Seeing no objection, we'll record that vote. And that will take us to, should we take up items 3 and 4 together? Seeing no objection, President Curry, can I get a motion on items 3 and 4?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt items 3 and 4, which are Legistar 81957 and 81978, respectively, both having to do with the revised City of Madison personnel rules. I am perusing the staff list here. Iman is here. Would it be helpful to have HR staff give a little overview? Yes. Iman, are you able to give a little overview of what's before us, please?
I will do my best. Yes, thank you. Item 3 and 4, as you mentioned, go together with our revised personnel rule. Item 4 is addressing the ordinance language that needed to be changed with the new adopted rules, forthcoming adopted rules. Item 2 is a new addition to the personnel rules that was at the request, I believe, of Alder Vitiver, discussions about kind of the formulaic items that keep coming across your finance committee agendas, that the volume of those kind of take away from the more important, I shouldn't say more important, but the other business that is before you. And so we added into the personnel rules at the discretion of the Finance Committee and Council on an annual basis, may put forth a resolution affording authorization rights to the finance director and the HR director within very specific parameters of the agency's operating budget and our classification system, that those two directors would have authority to make such changes without bringing forth to the council, as long as it was within those parameters. If I'm happy to add more or let you ask questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff on items 3 and 4? President Curry.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you. It's Iman, am I saying
Iman?
That? Iman. Iman, okay, yeah, thank you for being here. So when I was looking at the attachments for agenda item 3, I had some questions about the wording or the terminology used in the summary of major changes, mm-hmm. and specifically under the layoff and resignation title. Can you explain what... So I'm looking at increasing the time by which a displaced employee, so I'm assuming that means someone who's notified that their position is being eliminated, mm-hmm. has to work through placement options and allowing those employees to be red circled. What does that mean?
Okay. So you're specifically asking about the red circle?
Yeah, I have a couple questions on wording.
So
in there.
If an employee is notified that they're being laid off, then they have displacement rights. And what we would do in HR is we would look for positions that they are qualified for at the same pay rate and compensation rate. If we are not able to find positions that are vacant and available to them, then there is an option for them to go into lower level positions. And their salary would be red circled at where they are at. And that instance is usually used when movement of the individual is at no fault of their own. So because of the fact that there is a layoff procedure that at no fault of the employee, right, that they're being moved into a different position, they may have the ability to have their salary frozen, basically, where they are at. But the scenarios vary around that, and so I can't give you a more specific answer at this time.
No, that's helpful. And so based on your answer to my question, is it fair to assume recall rights and displacement rights are similar, synonymous?
Yes.
Okay, because you use dislocation or
displacement.
And yeah. In here, it's saying like allowing an employee recall rights to lower positions. That's basically what you just explained, correct?
A recall actually is if they have been laid off and now we are bringing employees back, they would then have those recall rights when they are coming back from layoff.
Gotcha. Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Displacement would happen before layoff. Recall would happen after layoff.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, President Curry. Additional questions on items 3 or 4? Alder Revere.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks for being here, Iman. I have a couple of follow-up questions. The first one is related to really the first resolution as opposed to the ordinance amendment. And that is the newly delegated authority to Aaron and Dave, to make it personal, but anyway, the HR director and finance director respectively. Could you estimate for us, please, approximately how many resolutions, based on your experience, you think would then no longer come before this committee if the resolution and is adopted by the council? Is it a lot? Is it a few?
I would estimate probably 2/3, if not more, of the resolutions would not come before you.
So the, you know, obviously I've served on this committee an awful long time, so I'm quite accustomed to reading you and your colleagues' excellent reports, the analysts' reports on reclasses. So the kind of run of the mill, I'll say, or routine reclasses where it's a couple of step levels, we will hardly ever see those again.
That is the intention, that if it's like part of those standard accountant series, engineer series, those would be more systematically processed administratively. Things that you would see would be creating new classifications, major restructuring, anything that would increase their operating budget of the agency, and any dramatic FTE count.
Would the same be true of the personnel board, Iman, where their agendas would fall down to practically nothing then?
Their agendas will be smaller, less routine, but they will likely involve more conversation around the things that don't move forward, if that makes sense.
You mean, for example, that's where an employee could appeal?
Yeah.
So personnel board would no longer have regular monthly meetings if this resolution is adopted, most likely?
Oh, no, we intend to still have regular monthly meetings. We would still anticipate agenda items. The agendas just wouldn't be as lengthy, or we would cancel the meeting if we didn't have any options. But our goal was to be able to always have a space to have a meeting if we needed to.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Did the personnel board already make their recommendation on this item? It's not listed in Legister yet, the legislative history. Did they meet?
They did adopt it last February
14th. Yeah, on Valentine's Day, so they were meeting. I just couldn't see what their action was. So it is recommended by the personnel board to us unanimously to adopt tonight?
Correct.
Very good. And then lastly, could you articulate to the best of your knowledge what the employee association's reaction to this proposal is, this change?
I don't know that I have talking points on that at this point. I know that there was discussion. I don't think they had any adverse reaction. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have moved forward with it.
They were involved in crafting these changes, Alder.
Thank you, Mayor. Is it your understanding that they're supportive?
It is my understanding. I mean, this has been an ongoing process to that's been a subject of multiple meet and confer meetings. And my understanding is that the changes that are reflected are things that were agreed on.
Thank you. That's reassuring. I certainly knew that we were using the meet and confer process as we were revising the personnel rules. It just wasn't clear to me if they were wholly supportive of this change. I realize I'm getting into discussion here, but it'll lead to perhaps the final question. But as you would recall, Mayor, from your longtime service on this committee, there have been occasions, admittedly very seldom, occasions where an employee association or formerly a union would come before this body for relief opposing a reclass, an HR resolution. And this was a, you know, body of policymakers that they could turn to, which perhaps wouldn't be an option in the future. So with that said, Iman, could you explain under the newly proposed personnel rules, before the proposal administratively went to the finance director and HR director for their approval, that formally came to this body and the personnel board and the common council, are those in any way disclosed to the relevant employee associations or labor unions? Are they at all involved in the process, or would they be if they wish to weigh in?
They would be involved at the discretion of the employee. We wouldn't normally say, hey, we got a position study, FYI. But I don't see any reason that the employee and or the employee, you know, agency would be able to say, you know, you might want to ensure that your association is involved in this.
Yeah, thank you. And over the years, it's been a case where a position, this was much more frequently pre-Act 10, but a position was a represented position, and the proposal was to make it to a Comp Group 18 supervisory position, that sort of thing. They would, you know, obviously be concerned about. But you say, I'm sorry, go ahead, Emma.
Sorry, I was going to say, I would add that when we do get a study for a position that is in a represented group, we do engage with our employee association reps when we are discussing, like, if there is movement out of the compensation group. So we do involve the associations to some degree in the related studies for their position.
And as you say, those are just for the ones that currently have legal rights, collective bargaining rights.
We consider all of our comp group or local 6000, 236. Yeah.
Okay. So that's very reassuring further. So just, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What you're saying is that if currently a position that's represented by an employee association, say, as you say, Local 6000, that the study might lead to that position being, again, replaced by a position, a managerial supervisory position, that there would be some sort of notification or consultation in that case.
Correct.
Very good. Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for being responsive. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Elder. President Curry?
Thank you, Mayor. I realize I forgot one, and I apologize if I just missed this, but because specific compensation groups are listed in Agenda Item 4, I saw Comp Group 19 is professional, confidential, and supervisory employees, but I couldn't find positions in Comp Group 21. Do they have a title?
Comp Group 21 is our division department head. So all of our agency heads are in Comp Group 21.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff on items 3 and 4? If not, thank you, Iman. And items 3 and 4 have been moved and seconded. Is there a discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of items 3 and 4. And we'll move on to item 9, which is Legistar 81942, approving an intergovernmental agreement with the town of Burke for fire services. On item 9, President Curry, a motion, please.
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt. Alder Rummel, you had questions on item 9?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'm just like some sort of it's a 30,000 foot level question. When I'm thinking about budgets and how we could have potential to coordinate with other municipalities, how this fits in. I mean, I understand the town of Burke eventually comes into the city of Madison, and maybe that's the impetus, but just sort of some like how do we, I know we don't make money, quote unquote, off these things, but we obviously cover our costs. And I see in the resolution document that, you know, it sort of would change with the wage increase or CPI, but, you know, I assume we have equipment and personnel and things that are part of our general budget. And I'm just wondering how it all fits together. And is this a kind of a strategy that we should look at in general? I mean, that's the big question.
So, Alder, I see Brent from Madison Fire here. That might be a question above his pay grade. So, Brent, you want to give a little bit of an overview, and then I can maybe speak to the bigger issues.
Yep. So I talked to Chief Carbon about this today and how we got to the price. So we already provide EMS services to Burke, and they pay about $65,000 a year for that. And then the dollar amount that was settled on for the fire services was to bring them more in line with what we charge Blooming Grove right now. So that's sort of the method behind it. But yeah, as far as just we're using current capacity, current staffing, current equipment. And so it's really just sort of recapturing some of the costs that I guess are involved with providing fire and EMS services to Burke.
And so it's just based on sort of your consideration of what it costs to include them as a percentage of what all the things that you do. And I mean, I just guess I'm curious, like, should we go out as a strategy and find other communities whose fires we could provide fire service to? Is that a strategy we should pursue? Or is this motivated to some degree that they will eventually come into Madison?
So, Alder, we don't approach communities and ask if they would like to purchase our fire service. We're amenable to the conversation when they come to us, and it's usually driven by their budget issues, that they're having trouble with staffing or many smaller places with getting volunteers. And that it becomes, for whatever reason, more financially viable for them to contract with us than to continue to try and fund their own services. But it's I can't quite imagine. We're not in a position to go to any surrounding community and say, you know, let us take over your fire service. So I think I think it will continue to be something that if surrounding communities are interested in that conversation, we'd be willing to discuss whether it makes sense for us. But I don't know that it's something that we could, you know, sort of be more aggressive about. And it's certainly not something that will make money on.
But when I think of our cost to continue budgets and how this might fit in or not, that's just kind of got me thinking about the question.
Well, I mean, as Brent said, it's, you know, we cover our costs. We charge a proportion of what we expect to see in calls to an area. And usually we have relatively decent data about what calls have already existed. But it's, you know, the money's going up and the costs are going up sort of together there. So it's not really, I mean, it's sort of a wash in terms of our own cost to continue.
Okay, thank you so much, both of you, for your answers.
Yep. Alder Vidover?
Refresh my memory. Wasn't there something in the shared revenue bill about combined services and there was sort of like a bonus, if you will, if that happened?
So if one of the jurisdictions saves, I believe it is 10% or more on the service, there is a small bonus. I believe it's over 3 years is my memory, but Dave probably has the details.
It actually has to be a 15% reduction. Oh. And a single community can get up to $10 million maximum based on the amount saved. And yes, it's I think it's over a 5-year horizon, but the rules have not been finalized. in that by the Department of Revenue and the legislature. So, you know, definitions of like what does savings mean and things like that are still yet to be determined.
So we would not be able to take advantage of that bonus payment in this case, even if we could prove that the town was saving 15%, which it sounds like they're probably not. But even if we could,
we get rid of it. And actually, the savings has to occur in the larger community. So we would have to show a 15% reduction in our costs, which is not going to be the case. So it's not exactly a program that's set up to support a lot of consolidation, but one that we're hoping the Department of Revenue rules might provide some additional flexibility that might be usable in this area, but it's not available right now.
Are there other questions on item 9? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of item 9? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of item 9. That will take us to item 12. On item 12, we have one registrant wishing to speak, Alex Saludos of District 5. Alex?
Thank you, Mayor. Testing?
We can hear you.
Thank you. Let me get my notes here. Good evening. As a lifelong resident and business owner, I urge you to delay extension of the use agreement for Warner. In its current form, it is highly inequitable to taxpayers. It significantly undervalues the rights granted to the Mallards. It leaves millions of dollars on the table over the term of the agreement. Under the proposed agreement, if the Mallards optimize their capital contributions, it will cost the city $12,000 a year for the Mallards to use Warner Park. All this raises several concerns. The Mallards' financial health is undisclosed, which is atypical, so valuing the use agreement is undeterminable. Unlike other enterprises and for-profit businesses, they do not pay property taxes or a pilot. The park staff lacks the necessary time and expertise to negotiate an equitable use agreement. There's no justification for a no-bid 11-year contract of this magnitude. Based on an analysis of dozens of comparable agreements, the user fee is disproportionately low and falls woefully short of fair value for the rights granted. For perspective, the 2018 city's golf enterprise paid the city 8.25% of revenues in pilot payments. A recent deal for a similar stadium that only seats 35% of Warner's capacity has a base rent of $120,000 per year, plus 15% of the gross over $800,000. If revenues based on alcohol sales are an issue, there are per-ticket models. This proposal is a sweetheart deal, lacks transparency, and inequitably favors the Mallards. I urge you to delay any extension of the agreement. Do a one-year deal for softball games and concerts with a per-ticket fee. Engage industry experts to evaluate the agreement's value and help negotiate an equitable deal. Open the agreement to competitive bidding. I'm here for any questions on how to secure a fair win-win deal for taxpayers. Thank you.
Are there any questions for our registrant? Seeing none, thank you. On item 12, President Curry, a motion, please.
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt. Are there questions for staff on item 12? Alder Rummel?
Thanks, Mayor. I see the Deputy Superintendent is here and probably others I don't see. And just maybe a response. I guess I've thought about this in the past, but not for this not for this item today. And I just wonder what kind of what our approach has been to this negotiation for the use agreement.
We have deputy or assistant superintendent CJ Ryan.
Hi, good afternoon. The Mallards agreement is an amendment based on the fact that they are going to be bringing women's softball to Madison. And when we looked at this agreement, we really wanted to balance the benefits that the Mallards, both in baseball and softball, are bringing to the stadium and what the city wants to and is able to invest. And so you'll see what we negotiated is that while they will have a lease of the stadium, they'll be responsible for scheduling, for having two teams bring activity to the stadium. They will also be making an investment of approximately $300,000 in order to redo the infield of the stadium. The other approach we took with this agreement was to balance the fact that as a city, the amount of funds that we have available for investment, for capital investment, can be offset by the fact that the Mallards can also make these capital investments. And so when you look at the lease rate, you'll see that that is offset by the capital improvements that the Mallards are able to make. And we created a created a structure that really incentivizes them to make the capital investments. So if there's a capital investment that the city needs to make, their ability to reduce their or to increase their rent credit would be reduced. So that is the basics of the agreement. In the Parks Division, we have really seen a benefit to having a partner like the Mallards run the stadium. And in fact, in this agreement, they'll be doing more of the scheduling and taking over this more of the scheduling, relieving the burden of scheduling as well as maintenance of the facility from the city. So that's a brief overview of our approach, and I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Alder Vinnever?
Is there another facility that could accommodate the needs of the Mallards and the new softball league?
In the city's system? Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Harrington McKinney, question?
Thank you very much. You mentioned in the agreement that the Mallards would be responsible for scheduling and maintenance. Could you share an idea what that looks like in terms of cost savings when you compare that with the city? Is my question clear?
I understand the question. I appreciate it. I don't have a good number that I can give you with confidence. I have not done that analysis. I'm happy to follow up with it. But what we're looking at for scheduling is, you know, we have an athletic scheduler that takes care of the facilities throughout the city of Madison. And they currently have to manage the requests that come from the Madison Metropolitan School District and Edgewood in any shoulder season requests, any requests for reservations outside of the Mallards baseball activities. So that's a administrative relief for our team. The other is the maintenance of the fields. It's my understanding, and I apologize, I've only worked here for a couple of years, so I can't speak from direct experience, but the city used to have a full-time athletic grounds worker at the stadium that we no longer have to have there. And so they've basically taken over the costs of a full-time staff person. And so it's those kinds of savings that we're seeing by having them manage the stadium and lease the stadium in full.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any additional questions on item 12? Seeing no additional questions on item 12, it's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of item 12? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of item 12. And that is the balance of items that were excluded from the consent agenda. We would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of adjournment? Seeing no objection, thank you all. Have a good evening.
Thank you.